Greetings. Exactly 4 years ago, Ryan and I traveled to California, and on October 30th, 2016, we gave our first speeches together about addiction and our journey through it. As we stood before 500 high school students, the formation of Hevel began, and along with Ashley and Taylor, we are sharing what we have learned about the art of living in both the heaven and the hell of substance abuse. The plot twist in our story is that 31 months after we started, Ryan succumbed to an insurmountable illness following a three-week valiant fight for his life. His inability to overcome that illness was in direct relation to his former drug use and its damage to his body. On May 31st, 2019, Ryan may have left this world, but we continue on because of and for him. So in honor of the day it all began and Ryan, I would like to now share the speech I gave. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here today. Most, if not all of you, have a cell phone. Have you ever thought about the definition of a cell phone? It is a mobile phone that uses radio waves to communicate with other phones through towers. With it, users are able to text, email, play games, go on Facebook, or whatever. It can be used to look up things or, ever important, take a photo. What is the emotional definition of a cell phone? Now, an emotional definition is the description of something using your emotions to describe it or explain it. In this case, we are talking about your cell phone. How do you feel about your cell phone? Personally, I use my phone each day to stay connected to family and friends. I do not use it all day long. It is not an extension of my arm. I need it, but I am not in love with it. I use it, but I could live without it. This is my emotional definition of my phone. How do you feel about yours? How would you feel if I took your cell phone away? What if I took it and said you could not have it back for hours, days, months, years? What if I took it and smashed it so that you could only sort of see the screen, only make calls, or only receive calls? Some of you feel as I do about cell phones. Some of you cannot be without your cell phone because it's your lifeline to your friends and family. Some of you could care less about it. We have the dictionary definition, and now you have an understanding of your personal emotional definition of a cell phone. This is an inanimate object, and yet we all feel something about it. People gravitate towards people who they feel the same things about. We all need to belong and to feel understood in concrete ways, things that are easily seen and understood, and emotional ways, things not easily seen and understood. Based on your emotional definition of your cell phone, I can separate all of you into different groups. Each person in your group would understand how everyone else in the group feels because you would all feel the same about your cell phone. As I am speaking, each one of you is assessing me, drawing your conclusions based upon your emotional definitions of words, placing me in a group. Some of you think I look like I am nice. Some of you think I look like I'm mean. And some of you have written me off. What could I possibly know? I am a person first, with my own emotional attachment to words, having developed them throughout my life. I am also a parent, and I have emotional definitions that relate to being a parent. All of my definitions have been developed through experiences and lessons learned. Now let's go back to the word cell phone. And instead of a cell phone, let's insert the word drugs. What is the definition of drugs? Drugs are any chemicals that are used to alter the mind and or body when swallowed, smoked, snorted, or used in any other way. What is your emotional definition of drugs? Does that definition cause you anxiety? Or do you smile because it is okay for you? Or do you shrug because you are indifferent? Now let's add a few more words with drugs to make a sentence. Your son has been arrested for drugs. What do you visualize about me the first time I was conscious of the fact that my son was using drugs? That knowledge occurred during a phone call from a police officer around midnight, 2 days after Christmas in 2005. That police officer informed me that my son had been arrested for drugs. He was 17 years old. Can you imagine the expression on my face while holding my phone to my ear based upon your emotional attachment to the words, arrested for drugs? Do you feel anything about those words? I was dumbfounded, devoid of expression, words, or thoughts, blank, nothing. If you know me, that doesn't ever happen. In fact, I'm sure I had also stopped breathing. I actually had to tell the officer I would call him back because I did not know what to do or feel. Then I realized I had just been pushed off a cliff into the deepest, darkest hole there is. Let's go back to your cell phone. Do you remember what you thought when I asked you, how would you feel if I took your cell phone away? That's just what happened. Your cell phone is gone and there is no guarantee you will ever get it back. I drove to pick my son up at the police station and every fiber in my being was screaming in my ears, literally screaming. I thought I was going to throw up from the noise and the feeling that my heart was going to leap right out of my chest. I talked, yelled, cried, and begged him all the way home. I told him, I am your new best friend and you will not be going anywhere without me. I am your lifeline. I looked into rehabs and decided on an outpatient one. We went 3 times a week while we were waiting for his court date, which was a few months away in May. We were okay. We were fine. It was just a crack. Fast forward a few months, he was still doing drugs. He was going to die. I talked to him. I reasoned with him. I threatened him. I begged him. Every emotion that we feel as humans was playing, not just daily, but hourly in my whole body. I was breathing, but barely. This was fixable, yes. We were fine. It was just a crack. He will be good as new. 2 weeks later, in April, I hired 3 U.S. Marshals to kidnap my son and take him away to rehab in another state. He fought them physically every step of the way to the vehicle, even though he was handcuffed and shackled. They kept him that way, even when they stopped at a convenience store all the way to Utah. I was breathing again. What do you think I was feeling in order to resort to something like that? Do you think I was a mean mom? Or do you think I was a scared out of my ever-loving mind mom? Let's go back to your cell phone. I just decided to keep it for a few weeks, maybe even longer. How do you feel now? I faced the judge on Ryan's court date because he was in Utah. I had taken him away without permission from the courts. I hadn't even told Ryan's lawyers because they would have advised me against it. The judge and prosecutor yelled at me for a long time that day, but I wasn't sorry. Ryan was going to die. I had to do it. I was able to breathe and sleep peacefully every day while he was away. They could only legally keep Ryan at the rehab until his 18th birthday, which was at the end of June. We attended family weekend and we brought him home. Life went on. We were okay. That cell phone of yours, I'm giving it back to you. You are good to go. Fast forward 5 months to November 2006, the weekend before Thanksgiving, almost a year since the whole thing had begun. It was Saturday at 12:30 in the afternoon and I was getting my hair colored. There were a few foils in my hair when my cell phone rang. I saw that it was my son's number, and I was not going to answer because I was mad. Ryan was supposed to call me that morning, and he hadn't. But I answered, you know, that lifeline, prepared to hear Ryan's excuses. Instead, I heard, is this Ryan's mom? Yes, I replied as my mind went into overdrive, trying to figure out who it was. You better come now. We cannot wake him up. He has blood in his mouth and his nose. It is coming out of his ears. The paramedics are on their way. What do you visualize my face looked like? Do you think I was breathing? What do you think I felt based upon your emotional definitions of the words, "We can't wake him up"? Now imagine my face when I found out that the young man who had called me tried to dump my son's motionless body in an alley with the help of two other supposed friends. It was only my son's weight and size that prevented them from being successful. They had to call the paramedics. Had to. How do you feel about those words? Dump his motionless body in an alley. How would you feel if your supposed friends would rather save themselves from getting into trouble than save your life? Would you dump your friends? Do you feel that drugs are worth that risk? Ryan's heart stopped on the way to the hospital, so they had to choose the closest one. I arrived and they rushed me back to my son, who was lying on a gurney. He was able to speak at that point. He told me he did not mess up. I told him I knew and that it was okay. I was breathing because he was talking to me. We were fine. Yes, it was just a crack. We'll be good as new. The doctor stepped around the corner and told me he had to put Ryan on a ventilator. His lungs were shutting down. He was dying before my eyes. Ryan's last words were, "Don't let them, Mom. I will die. No, Mom." I did not say a word. I could not breathe. There was no emotion. I was in shock. Around the corner from the gurneys in the ER is a tiny waiting room for families of critical patients. Our friends and family filed in. We were fine. He was fine. I talked to him. It was just a crack. We will be good as new. Then the doctor walked in and said, "Ryan will probably not make it through the night. Do you understand the seriousness of this?" One of my brothers broke the silence by asking me if I was okay. "No, I am not okay. Not even close to okay. Now remember your cell phone? I just took it from you and I threw it against the wall. It is shattered into a million pieces and you will never, ever have a phone again. Your lifeline is gone. How about you? Are you okay?" Thanksgiving comes. I spend the day between the hospital and basting a turkey at home. I was trying to make this okay. I cried over the turkey and I cried over my son. Every day the doctor would say, "We cannot get him off the ventilator. He should be able to breathe on his own. This is bad, and this is my new normal." I slept at the hospital at night. My dad sat with Ryan while I would take my youngest to school in the morning and then go to work. I did this day after day. It's now day 18. I was standing outside my son's ICU room talking on the phone with a long-term nursing care facility. He was nearly 18 and a half years old. They were going to come and put a peg into his stomach so that the feeding tube could be removed from his nose. They had already done a trach to move the breathing tube from his mouth to his throat. After they performed the peg procedure, they would transport him by ambulance across the street to his new home. He was stable, but asleep, breathing because a machine was doing it for him, alive, but not living. How long was I going to keep him this way? 6 months? 1 year? Longer? Ryan would hate that. No, no more than a year. I was 44 years old, making a life and death decision about my child, my lifeline. This was hell on a daily basis. I hung up and walked into his room, pleased that I had found a good nursing home. I looked at my dad. I looked at the doctor standing there, the very man who had told me that Ryan should be able to breathe on his own, and because he wasn't able to, that this was bad. Then I looked at my son, my lifeline, and the most beautiful blue eyes looked back at me, and he smiled. Because he had a trach, he wasn't able to speak, so he mouthed the most beautiful word. That word was mommy. My heart skipped a beat, maybe 10. He cried, I cried. This was heaven. Yes, this was heaven. How do you go from planning on turning off your child's breathing machine because this was bad to he's awake in under a minute? The range of emotion swept through me as hard as it had when I first learned he was using drugs almost a year ago. This time, however, I had flown out of hell's hole all the way up to heaven. We are okay. It is just a crack. We are fine. He's okay. He's going to live. Remember your cell phone that I took away? Broke into a million pieces telling you that you will never, ever have a cell phone again? Well, I glued it and I duct taped it, and so it works, but not perfectly. You can have it back now. How do you feel? Weeks, months go by. Who knows how much time has passed? We were okay. Until I realized that Ryan was doing drugs again. I stopped breathing again. My anxiety was high again. Things were disappearing from the house again. Important things, expensive things, silly things. Nothing was off limits in Ryan's mind because he needed his fix. We were locking things in trunks to prevent Ryan from taking them, just like before. It didn't work. I stand in a group with other parents whose kids are doing drugs. We all feel passionate about our children and about drugs. We have the same emotional attachment to those words, children and drugs. We cry together, we talk, we are angry together. We are scared together. We are drawn together not because our kids play sports on the same team or singing in the school choir, but because they are doing drugs. We are the parents of drug addicts. We understand each other in this group. Ryan's friend Kyle dies. His body was riddled with infection from his drug use. His battle is over. Ryan's girlfriend Bethany takes her father's gun and dies by suicide because she no longer wants to be an addict, but she can't imagine her life without drugs. Chad dies. He overdoses on heroin and died while his girlfriend watched. The death of these kids changed the parents of drug addicts group. I'm on the outside now. Their kids are dead. Mine is alive. I don't know how they feel, and I don't want to know. I came close, but still, it's not exactly the same. I still have a chance to win. Their battle was over. Their kids are dead. Mine is alive. No amount of duct tape or glue will fix this for them ever again. Hey, remember your cell phone that I broke into a million pieces and then fixed? Yeah, I'm taking it away again. I don't know when or if you'll ever get it back. Oh well, sorry. How do you feel now? How do you imagine I felt? Our battle continued for a few more years, on, off, panic, anger, rehab again, but voluntarily this time. I hated my cell phone. Every time it rang, I was terrified. I could not breathe. I was sad. I was angry. I did not sleep because something might happen to my lifeline. I didn't live. I couldn't. What if I missed a call? I was a mess. My kids were a mess. I was failing all of them because I could not live. I was on the outside of the group. No, wait. I'm on the inside again because unfortunately there are more kids addicted to drugs. Another friend named Chad dies. He overdoses. I've known him since he was 11 years old. There's never been a holiday in my home, family meal, or party that he was not at. He was Ryan's friend and brother. He visited Ryan every day when he was on the ventilator. I could not believe this. I cannot believe this. His mom leaves the Parents of Drug Addicts group and moves to the Parents of Dead Kids group. Fast forward to today. I'm alive. Ryan is alive. We are breathing. We are laughing. We are okay. It's just a crack. We will be fine. He will be as good as new. Oh, and here's your cell phone back. It may not look as sleek as the other ones, but it has survived being broken into a million pieces. It still works. It still does everything that it did before, and maybe some more. It's happy to be working. No matter what happens in the future, it is determined to never, ever turn off so that you will always have a lifeline. It's sort of an upgrade in a battered shell. How do you feel now? How do you imagine I feel now? No parent ever wants to be in the Parents of a Drug Addict group. No parent ever wants to be in the Parents of Dead Children group. Other people do not understand us. At times they avoid us. They are afraid of us because they never want to be a part of either of these groups. Unfortunately, some of them will, because their child will push them off a cliff into the deepest, darkest hole that there is. These parents will need the understanding that only those of us and the Parents of a Drug Addict group know. Do you know how you feel about drugs? Do you know how I feel about drugs? Do you feel that it is in your best interest to use drugs to alter your emotional definitions or to numb them? How about using drugs just to fit in with a group? We all want to be understood, to be heard. We can all agree on the definitions of words, but we differ on our emotional attachments to those words. Whether we are talking about an inanimate object like a cell phone or drugs or life, we all feel something about those things, and we separate into the groups that we identify with most. We do this whether we want to or not, because we need the understanding that can be found in a group. It's not about whether you are a kid or an adult or a jock or a real-life princess. It's about your emotional attachments to words and what you choose to do with the knowledge of that. That speech led a group of high school students not only find understanding for me as an outsider to their group, but more importantly, it opened the door for them to discover understanding for how they feel about an inanimate object as well as drugs. I will never forget the transformation on their faces as they went from thinking I would tell them to not do drugs to realizing they were the ones who had to decide that. And the best way was to know how they really feel. After all, words may be defined in a dictionary, but how they feel is carried in our hearts from our own experiences. There is power in knowing and believing in our own thoughts and feelings. Thank you for listening to just a part of Ryan's life and our journey. Have the best day possible for you.